and welcome to ContraPulse. This is Julie Valamont. This week, we talk with Noah Van Norstrand. Noah's driving fiddle, feet, and mandolin have been a rhythmic powerhouse behind some of the most popular dance bands of the last decade, including Great Bear, Buddy System, Wake Up Robin, and the Faux Paws. He has performed all over North America at nearly 200 different dance weekends, folk festivals, and music camps. His musicianship is deeply compelling and virtuosic, but difficult to define, freely blending traditional folk genres such as Celtic and old-time Appalachian fiddling with elements of rock, newgrass, and pure, unfiltered improvisation. Noah's unique approach to foot percussion and innate understanding of dynamics and groove have made him a defining figure of modern contra dance music. He often works with his older brother Andrew Van Norstrand, and together they manage their own independent label, Great Bear Records, which has released over a dozen albums. Noah is also a prolific composer, and many of his tunes can be found in the recently published music book, Long Flight Home, original tunes by Andrew and Noah Van Norstrand. Whether he's leading a full band or completely solo and unaccompanied, Noah's music is always inspired, honest, and irresistibly danceable. We had so much fun talking that this week is another double episode. In the first half, we talk about how Noah got started playing for contra dances, his influences, growing up in a family band and creating his own style of music alongside his brother Andrew, his creative process and tune writing. He even plays a couple fiddle tunes and demonstrates some foot percussion. Strand.
Hello, Julie.
Welcome to ContraPulse.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here.
I am really glad to have you here.
We're so close.
We are so close. For all our listeners, this is a really special treat. First of all, we're inside a building. Noah quarantined for 2 weeks to visit me and drove all the way up from Asheville very safely. And so he's actually in my house.
No masks.
So any slurring is just us. And he actually has a fiddle here. I've been too far away from people to do much music, you know, recording, but maybe he'll play a little fiddle in this episode. So don't be startled if you hear fiddle out of nowhere.
I know how to do that. I can do that.
It's just Noah. Well, welcome.
Thanks.
I did leave the door open so that people can still imagine the sounds of buses and trucks going by on the porch and hear the wind blow from time to time. To complete the ambiance.
You gotta keep them sounding the same.
Yeah.
So people don't get confused.
This is the professional level soundscape that people have come to expect.
Yes.
At ContraPulse. The weather report. I've been also giving a weather report at the beginning of every episode. It's a beautiful late summer day. I don't know, high 70s, not too humid, nice breeze, sunny.
I wore my flannel this morning. And it was magically wonderful.
That truck was still really loud and we're inside. Yeah, I'm glad you could wear a flannel.
Felt really great. Put it on, feel all cuddly.
You love flannel season.
I love flannels.
Mm-hmm. You love flannel season. So we're just going to talk, and this is a different kind of conversation because, you know, of course, you and I are bandmates.
This is already, I think, as formal as we've ever been with each other.
Yes.
Thanks so much for having me, Julie. You're buddy. You're not Julie. Buddy. Hi, buddy.
Hi, Buddy. So we are in the band Buddy System. I think you can figure out where the name comes from. So I'm going to be asking you questions that I already know the answers to.
Phew, good.
So, and if you don't remember them, I'll answer them for you. So can you tell us all like how you got started playing for dances?
Yes, I think I can do that.
Okay.
I think I can handle that one.
I figured I'd start with an easy one.
I can handle that one. Me and my brother, Andrew Van Noorstrand, with our mom, Kim, we started playing for contra dances in like the year 2000. I think I was like 10 and Andrew was 12-ish. And Andrew and mom went to Jay Unger and Molly Mason's Ashokan camp, Ashokan fiddle camp. And they just like fell in love with it and they came back. I was too young to go the first year. So they came back. And they fell in love with it. We're talking all about it. And then the next year we all went as the three of us. And then after that, we started playing for contra dances pretty much right away. And we were terrible. Can you say sucked on this podcast?
Is that okay?
We sucked. I think anyway. I'm pretty sure we did.
I mean, 12-year-old, 10-year-old, and your mom, who was a good classical pianist. Mm-hmm.
But never had played folk music before.
Yeah. Do you have early recordings from those days?
Not those days. Nope.
Aww.
I played almost entirely hand percussion on the first 3-4 years of Great Bear. I played like hand drums and shaker. I tried to play fiddle, but like I must not have been I thought I was good enough because I would get annoyed at Andrew and mom when they wouldn't let me, but I must not have been good enough.
So this is kind of an inspiration to anyone who's learning a new instrument, because at one point you were not good enough to play fiddle in Great Bear.
Nope.
And then look how you turned out. Turned out all right.
Whew.
It turns out that thousands of hours doing something will just kind of end up in you being good at it.
Yeah. Well...
I know it wasn't all the practice.
We started playing for contra dances like right away and then kept on going to Ashokan. And Ashokan was kind of where we are once a year did all of our learning. Andrew and I would like do all of our learning at Ashokan and then teach ourselves for the rest of the year pretty much. I'm more self-taught than Andrew was. Andrew took some lessons, but I just copied Andrew in everything.
So the younger brother looking up to him. And you were homeschooled, right?
So yes, that's important to point out. Yes.
Yeah.
We were homeschooled.
So that you had time to do these things.
Yep.
During the day. So what were some of the classes you took at Ashokan?
I would take Sue Conger would teach. She taught Contra Fiddle 1. So like for the first... four or five years of Ashokan, I would like go to her class, and that was, I always liked that class because I could pick up the tunes real fast, and then it made me feel like all good about myself and confident and all that good stuff. So I liked that. And then later on, Rodney Miller was the person, like the Air Dance was the band at Ashokan for many years in those mid-2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was always there. And those are two of the main fiddlers at Ashokan. Those are the main classes I would take.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was also because we were homeschooled, Ashokan was also like my highest social outlet. It was like, ooh, social time, Ashokan, yeah. Friends. Crazy concept, friends.
Other kids your age.
Making friends, having crushes.
Treat me.
Yeah, it's the good stuff.
And also, like, speaking of fiddlers, like, Jay Unger was obviously playing a lot of fiddle. And David Kaner.
I forget those. Yeah, because they're there every single year. They're still always there. So, yes, they're always there. And huge, huge influence on those early years and now.
So, what were your first contraband gigs?
First ones, we were in Fulton, New York, which is like teeny little city outside of Syracuse. We were like in the Syracuse, New York area. And Syracuse has a wonderful dance community. They, like, as we traveled around more and more throughout the years, you got to like see a lot of dance communities in Syracuse was always really, really, really good at being welcoming. Like, it was really good at being welcoming to everybody and in a healthy way. And it was a small community, but sometimes the small communities are the best at being welcoming. So it was a great little community. So yeah, that was the Syracuse Contra community. They were the ones that had to listen to us when we sucked.
I'm sure they were gracious and supportive. I mean, you guys were cute, and I feel like cuteness goes a long way.
Oh man, that
must
have helped. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it was Andrew on fiddle, your mom on piano, and you on hand percussion.
Pretty much. Yep. There'd be like one or two sets that I could play fiddle with Andrew on, but that was a thing. And then in 2003, we made our first CD, and that felt like a big deal at the time.
Yeah, too. That's 3 years into doing all this. It's not that long. You were 13.
I was, 13. Yeah. And then that kind of kicked off a new thing, because we recorded a CD every single year for 3 years, I guess. We recorded a CD in 2013 and 2014 and 2015, and then took a year break, so it wasn't every year. But then we just started making a lot of CDs through high school age. Mm-hmm. And that was a very different way of approaching music than just for a dance. Like that let Andrew and I start to think about music with arrangements and
And play with textures and drama.
somewhere between 2003 and 2004 is when I learned how to play fiddle.
After your first album, before your second album.
Yes, because by the second album, I was mostly playing fiddle on Driftage. That was our second album, and the first one I played fiddle on like two tracks on the first one, but the second one was like all fiddle. So somewhere in there, I must have gotten good enough, or maybe it was just that Andrew wanted to play guitar, and I wasn't going to learn how to play guitar, so
someone had to play fiddle.
Someone had to play guitar.
Yeah. Driftage is a great album. It's amazing that was your second album.
It has had staying power.
Yeah.
I've been surprised at the still hearing people like find the CD now. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it has some good tunes on it. Good tune playing, fun arrangements. So when you were kind of learning, quote-unquote, learning how to play fiddle, what was the main way you learned? Was it playing along with Andrew? I doubt you were alone practicing very much.
Wasn't alone practicing, no.
Were you playing along with recordings?
Nope, didn't do that. So Andrew and I would just, we were quote unquote homeschooled, but really all we did was play music. When I'm like, think back, like we would all day, every day, for like that was like high school age years, we would just play music all the time. So I think I'm pretty sure the learning how to play fiddle just came from just constantly playing music with Andrew. I remember I would write tunes, and then my tunes that I would write were there weren't chords for them. They're like too weird to have chords. They weren't in a scale. And I didn't understand what a scale was. So it's just like, and then I would get really, really mad and frustrated at Andrew when he wouldn't play chords to my tune and he wanted to change it. Okay, don't change my tune. And he's like, there aren't any chords to your tune, though. Like, there isn't. And he's like, I don't want to hear it. This is my tune. You can't change my tune. Those were the arguments that we had as siblings. Mom! Andrew's trying to change my tune again so it fits within music.
Within music. Your mom probably didn't intervene too much, did she?
No. I can't imagine. Just kind of let that happen, yeah.
Just yeah.
And it never got actually ugly.
Yeah.
That's good.
And, you know, you've since then, you've had many bands. I mean, we're talking about Great Bear. You had like almost 20 years of Great Bear mm-hmm. before finally went into hibernation, as you say, with yeah. the old bear joke. you know, you've had many other bands over the years. You had Andrea Noah Band, where you're doing more songs and tunes and textures and up to like a 6-piece band.
Like a folk rock band, yeah. We tried to do that thing for a while.
Yeah, for Contras, you had Great Bear. Then Great Bear became a larger band, the 6-piece version of Great Bear.
Yeah, well, you want to know it. You want to know the timeline?
No? I'm not trying to go in order necessarily. Okay. I'm just kind of give our listeners a sense of
sense. Okay.
But we can go back in time. I just realized if we talk about all of your beginnings, we won't have time for any of the now because you have a long history.
What was that thing you would say? Like there's like your age. Like how long you've
yes,
been
how
born.
How old are you in Contra years?
This Contra age.
Right.
And when Buddy System started, at least, I was an old man.
Yes.
And Julie was the angsty teenager or something. I don't know.
I was. Not. When Buddy System started, I was 8 years old in Contra years.
8 years old in Contra years. And I wasn't an old man. I was like 20. Years old.
You were 20 years old in Contra years, so you had 12 more years of Contra playing under your belt yeah. than me. Yeah. I know, I thought of that phrase, Contra years, because people would say, we're doing this thing for young callers or young musicians. And I was like, well, maybe we can be less ageist about it. Like, is it actually the age of the people, or is it we want them to be new? Because I felt old in people years. Well, not old, but older. Mm-hmm. I wasn't like a youngin, but
you
I was
eight.
New. I wasn't right. I wasn't eight, but I was new in Contra years, and so I wanted to be considered new and not old. And you know, seeing you know, there are sometimes new callers who are in their 50s or 60s, and mm-hmm. they're also new. Anyway, we digress. I want to double back just really quick to your mom, Kim Yurton. She's a great piano player.
Mama Bear. That's what she likes to be called.
And I feel like it's okay to talk about her for a second because I did ask her if she wanted to be interviewed, but she said she is too shy for such a thing.
That checks out.
And she was very honored by the request, but can't stand the thought of talking about herself into a microphone for this long. So I might just talk about her playing through you.
Yeah, that might work.
She, as a piano player, obviously, like, played a lot of, like, kind of boomchuck-style piano. A lot of it she made up herself. But do you know who her early influences were?
I'm trying to think. Who was at Ashokan those earlier? So definitely Rochelle from...
Rochelle O'Quinn
yeah,
from Tidal Wave?
From Tidal Wave.
And other projects?
Domino was the band at Ashokan yeah. back then.
Mm-hmm. With Richard Fauré
yeah,
and Savan Jacques.
Yep. Yeah. So Rochelle was definitely there, and that was like her highlight of a teacher at Ashokan. I'm trying to remember who taught her. Like because she has a story. I'm not gonna remember who it was, but she has a story of like the first when Andrew was just decided randomly he wanted to play fiddle, not violin, fiddle. He kind of just like out of the blue decided that when he was 8, and mom was like, okay, I don't know what to do with that. Mm-hmm. She has the sort of, someone showed her of just like the boom chunk of like just play this note on the bass and then just play the chord and then just go back and forth. Mm-hmm. And so like put her hands on the piano to do that. And she says how weird that felt for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess as far as a person, I think Rochelle would be a person she respected and learned the most from.
Yeah, because there aren't, like, I remember one of my favorite things about Great Bear when I first heard of you guys, and just always, is that it's a very piano-centric band. And you know what the piano can do as an instrument. And, you know, your mom is a wonderful musician and a classically trained musician, mm-hmm. but this whole improvising in the folk realm was very new for her.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys would write her parts and teach them to her.
Yeah.
And she would play them.
Mom was a piano. In Great Bear, mom was a piano player. Like all of her piano parts, she learned from a guitar player.
Yeah.
From Andrew. But Andrew, you know, did a lot of that arranging. And so that did make for some unique piano parts, I think.
Yeah. And then, you know, all of Great Bear's, I was going to say histrionics, that's a bit of a strong word, but we'll say drama. You know, she's doing all these crazy five chords and drones, and her right hand is doing tinkly things up high and builds. And
there's a lot. I remember those early like rehearsals that we would have with Great Bear, when Andrew would be like coming up with and teaching those parts and seeing if they were even like piano-able parts. And it took hours. It was like a long time to get that all right. Because they were complicated. Andrew had lots of ideas that he wanted heard, and Mom was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, some of them are really technically difficult.
They're complicated.
She's doing like arpeggios, like doo ba 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 doo ba, all like both hands in octaves, all sorts of things.
I would be so bored for those rehearsals.
Well, I bet, because you were probably tuned out the whole time.
Yeah, they wouldn't let me leave. I couldn't go do something else. But
you were not old enough to be unsupervised.
Probably.
Oh man, there's so many different conversational directions we'll go in. But
oh, there's something about Grape that I just remembered a thing, like how so many of our Grape Bear sets were Andrew had like a guitar riff, a guitar hook for a thing, for a tune, and he would play it. And then he would like kind of think of and teach Mom this piano part to also do the guitar riff to do that. And then they would do that, and then they would play it. And once they were playing it well, then I could like pay attention again, and then I would like write a tune on top of it. And then that was how like 90% of all of Great Bear's sets were.
So the tune
written.
Came after the
yes,
riff.
Almost always the tune was just like, and now Noah, you do something.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, we'll talk about tune writing. But I just wanted to add that, like, when I was a new piano player, I wanted to just hear as much country music as, not a new piano player, but a new contra player. I wanted to hear as much country music
as possible.
When you
were like one.
When I was one in contra years.
Yeah.
Just a contra infant. And I put a whole bunch of things on my iPod. Remember those?
And vaguely.
I had all these albums on my iPod, and Dancing Again by Great Bear was one of them. And so just that sound of you guys playing tunes, that's a very tune-based album.
Mm-hmm.
And your mom's just playing boom-check piano. And, you know, I think when I started playing with you in a band, which I never would have predicted when I was a contra infant that we would end up in a band together, I felt like I already knew your playing because I had learned while listening to it. And also, you already knew how to play with a piano player. And that was really cool. That's all. I'm not trying to go anywhere. But
I'm nodding.
Yeah, he's
smiling.
He's nodding enthusiastically. That's great for an audio medium. That's really good. Yeah, we could talk about tune writing. We could talk about, why don't we talk about contra dance playing first in more general? So eventually you played for, I know you guys used to like busk at farmers markets and you played for dances. When did you start really touring a lot? Because now, I mean, Great Bear for the last few years was known as a touring band. You guys played dance weekends all over the country, and you were on the national circuit, probably the busiest fiddler. Like,
we
played the most dance weekends.
As far as dance weekends go, we tallied it up, and definitely yes.
Yeah.
As far as dance weekends go.
Especially like the last couple of years between Great Bear plus Buddy System.
It was Great Bear, Buddy System, and then there was some other newer projects that we were starting. That 2017, I played 34 or 35 dance weekends.
That's insane.
That year. Yep. And that was just the dance weekends, because then we also had like a whole bunch of other gigs in between all of the dance weekends. But yeah, that was a lot.
I mean, this has literally been your life.
Yeah, since I was 10. So we didn't start touring when I was 10, obviously. But I would say our first dance weekend that we flew to was in 2006, and it was the I need to remember the name of it. It was the Dallas, Texas dance weekend. When in Doubt Swing. That was that weekend. I think it's still happening. But that was the first dance weekend. Rhonda Beckman, who ran that weekend, heard us at Flurry and liked us, and like she hired us for our first thing, and they got like plane tickets, and that was like a big deal.
Yeah.
And so 2000, that's when we started like flying, traveling farther to gigs. And 2006 is also when we did our first Southern tour, which is very funny to think that now that I live in Asheville, that's very funny. Thinking back on my first Southern tour, I never thought I would live in Asheville.
Right?
Yep, that's weird. It's great. It's fun, but whew, surprise.
Yeah, the ways that life takes us, we can't always predict.
So I think we really started traveling a lot in 2006, 2007, and it just kept on going more and more and more and more from then till the end, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it started getting like, we would play the average of like 15 dance weekends a year. Great Bear would 15, 17 dance weekends a year from like 2012-ish through 2017 or 18. Yeah.
And so you've played for all kinds of dances. You've played for like the smallest community dances. You played weddings. I was going to say you probably played weddings. I'm like, wait, I played them with you. You played weddings. We played one wedding where one of the people there who was a brand new dancer brought a dog to dance in line on its hind legs. And Valerie Helbert was calling. She was such a good sport. You know, she was trying to hurt everybody at the wedding. And
yeah,
then she
did it.
She just looked out on the floor and she's like, oh, and there's a dog dancing. Okay. Went on with the walkthrough. So you played all sorts of dances. You played community dances. You played the dances around New England that are well known, like at the Scout House in Concord. You played at the Greenfield Grange. You guys played back at the VFW when that was a still thing in Boston. I remember seeing, that was the first time I ever saw you guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I remember the energy was like palpable. Like that when you guys played at the Scout House, you couldn't get in the back in the doors.
Those were really fun nights.
It was just incredible. And Boston friend said, hey, there's this out-of-town band. You haven't heard of them because you're new to this, but they're called Great Bear, and they're really fun.
Aww.
And that was just a trio. And I went in. There was, like, electricity in the room. It was really cool.
When that happens, I mean, Buddy System has had that, too. And that's what you do it for, man. When those nights that just have it all. Ooh. It's hard to beat.
Yeah, like when the sound's good.
The sound's good, and the floor is good, and the lighting's good, and the hall's good, and it's full of dancers that want to be there.
And they're enthusiastic.
Yep.
And you give it out, and they give it back.
Yep. Those are good times.
Yeah. Podcast, I ask people kind of analytical questions about their playing, but I know that's not really your jam.
So I wouldn't have many answers.
So I'll ask you and see what you have to say, and then I'll happily help you out.
Let's do this.
Okay.
Let's do this.
If you had a philosophy as a contra dance fiddler, or like what are the things you do to play to the dancers?
Okay, I can do this.
Yeah, you got this.
That. My approach to playing fiddle for contradance is when you're like playing the fiddle, you are almost more rhythm than the rhythm players. Like if you're arranging a contradance, the piano and the guitar and stuff would have, this is how Graper approached it, you'd have like a hook or a thing that was memorable, and that became the melody for dancers. Like that's the thing that dancers would hum and like remember musically, which then left the fiddle tune to be like just the steady rhythmic 16th notes that just make up rhythm. It's just rhythm. And that is to say that there are some awesome tunes and tunes matter, but I feel like as a fiddler playing for contradance, my number one priority is rhythm and letting the memorable parts come from the backup.
The catchy
memorable parts. Because a dancer in general has a lot going on. They're thinking about a lot. They're remembering the moves and whether or not they are flirting with the person they're dancing or very much not. They're wanting to have the dance end and anywhere in between. They have a lot going on. And they don't have the brain space to like think of a little fiddle tune. They're not listening to that, but they are listening to like the backup, just rhythm that's telling their feet where to go. And they can pick up on slower melodies, like a riff or a hook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so the fiddle tune then becomes almost more supportive to me.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer your question?
There's many ways to answer this question, but yes, that was great.
Whew.
Good job. Was it like that in the early days of Great Bear? Or I mean, in the beginning, you guys just played tunes, mostly.
Kind of. Well, I listened back. The first Great Bear CD is out of print now.
Yeah. Top secret.
But there are a handful of copies around somewhere. And I listened to it recently, and it was a lot. There was even a lot of arrangement on that CD. Like,
yeah.
I mean, this mostly came from Andrew. He really, really got into it. And, mm-hmm. But we did arrangement, a lot of arrangement from almost the beginning, not the actual beginning, but from almost the beginning.
Was there a particular band that inspired you to want to arrange things?
Yeah, there was. Yeah, it was Wild Asparagus. Yep. Definitely. I'm sure that's a super common answer, but it's a common answer for a good reason, because they did it first. Yep. Wild Asparagus was the band at Ashokan when Andrew and Mom went, and I was too young. And that was the first time Andrew like heard this music arranged. And like you could do something more with this than just play the tune. And it felt better.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that was right at the beginning of Graper. So really, yeah, right from the beginning we were attempting to do arrangement things.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you had this nice like kind of cauldron of ideas at home where you could just stay at home and play with ideas all day. And
all day, every day.
Yeah. And so you just end up coming up with your own sound. Kind of being in this bubble, it makes your fiddle playing really unique. How do you feel playing for dance? Like when Buddy System plays, I feel like we have very intentionally chosen to sometimes have arrangements and sometimes not.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one foot in each world. There's one foot in the world of we're playing a good solid tune and we're just going to play the crap out of it. Pardon my French. Just try to play it as well as we can. With energy. But then other times we'll do these like really elaborate arrangements and riffs and stuff because that's also fun.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on those things?
Well, I definitely liked both. I would say that Buddy System was the first band that I was part of that didn't have Andrew in it. And that was new. Mm-hmm. That was new and special. We were at Ashokan.
Yes.
We were at Ashokan and just, we became buddies.
We were camp buddies. Yep. You play this icebreaker game and then the person you're with is your buddy for the week.
And we ran with that for like a decade.
We did.
We're still running with that. I should tell Jay, like, hey, we're still doing that thing.
The thing where we were camp buddies, yep.
2000 whatever. So we were the buddies there, and then I know you did the techno thing, and I suggested it, right? That, like, hey, I want to be in a techno band with
you.
Yeah,
you asked me.
That sounds fun. And it was very fun,
right? Because I was at Ashokan with Nor'easter,
mm-hmm.
but I did they wanted one like late night techno concert for the kids, and I had been dabbling in it with some other bands, and you asked if you could play with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think subconsciously I was like just kind of looking for some way to play music outside of the context of Grey Bear.
Right. I mean, that's a healthy thing to do.
Yeah. And so, yeah, anyway, Brady System was the first band that I was in without Andrew. And you, the way you play piano obviously is like so different from Mom's. Like everything was just so different. And I then realized that I was playing different. I play fiddle so different in Buddy System than I do in Great Bear. So, so, so different. And in lots of ways, it's a much, almost a, like a much more satisfying experience. Because in Great Bear, it's really that other way around of like, I think of it as just being rhythm. Well, there's a rock song going on. Like a pop song going on. And then Buddy System was like, oh no, these actually are about the tunes. Like it's still all about rhythm to me. But the tunes do matter. And you were able to like back me up in a way that freed me to like do whatever I wanted. Because I couldn't actually do whatever I wanted in Great Bear. It was so arranged.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have like this time through to take a solo, do whatever you want, but then you have to go right back to the arrangement. And a Buddy System, it's just a duo, and I just would do whatever I wanted all the time, and then you were always somehow right there. How'd you do that? So that was really, really great. That felt really great for me to play music in a completely different way, fiddle in a very different way.
It was really fun when we were a new band, because like we had to learn how to, like, any new band, we've talked about this in past episodes, but any new band takes more work than it might look from the outside, where you have to like learn how each other works, unless you're like you and Andrew where you grow up together or something.
Well, we still did that. It was just, we just, yeah.
Right. You did it. You had to do it too. Yeah. I mean, everyone has to do
it. Everyone has to do it. We had a lot of time to do it.
And I remember, like, I had played in many pickup bands, and I have many just friends who we do casual dances with once in a while for fun. And so I'm used to fiddlers having tune lists. And it's like, so Noah, what's your tune list? And you're like, tune list.
Cosmic Tim.
And it was really interesting to pull that out of you, because you knew all these traditional tunes from all your years at Ashokan and playing in the jams. And, you know, you'd grown up listening to a lot of really classic albums,
mm-hmm.
which we can get into, you know, Liz Carroll and, oh man, who's the other female fiddler? Showy fiddler.
Eileen
Ivers.
And
you listened to all sorts of things. And so you knew a lot of tunes, but you didn't know you knew them.
Nope.
I used to joke that in the early days of Buddy System, you were the fiddler, but I had the fiddler brain where I kept track of all the tunes and what they were called and taught you repertoire.
Uh-huh.
And you were the accompanist. Like, your playing is so rhythmic. Like, you're one of the most rhythmic fiddlers I've ever met. And as a piano player, it's really fun to play with you, because it means that I can be rhythmic, but I don't have to. And that frees me up to do all sorts of things, chords and pads and textures and things with my mm-hmm. left hand. And I think that's one of the things that makes it possible for us to play as a duo, because, you know, there aren't a lot of duos in contradancing. There are many, but most people want a fuller sound.
Want at least, yeah, third person, yep.
Yep, and just more people to like hold down the rhythm. And we could do both things. And there is times when I would be playing the melody in my right hand and a bass line in my left hand on the piano, and then you would be backing me up with the shuffling that was so rhythmic.
I'd be the guitar, yep.
Yeah, and that was really fun. And so I was grateful for all your experience being a rhythm player in Great Bear. Because you had this whole texture, this whole palette of things you could do. It wasn't just play the tune. It was also like chops and shuffles and
noises.
Harmony.
Lots of noises.
Noises, yes. Lots of noises. And little counter melody lines. And they're all very like pop. They have this pop sensibility to them. They're all very catchy.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm listening to Julie. And I'm like, yeah, I'm learning too. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
But we've never talked about this.
Yeah, I'm learning about myself too. Uh-huh. That's a good point you make there.
And then to watch you like, oh, what's the right phrase? Come into your own is too patronizing a phrase. But watch you embrace this role as a melody fiddler was really, really fun.
It was meaningful for me too. I felt it too. For me, it was when there was all those other, you know, options of things to do, like you playing melody and me playing rhythm also. But then when you would also play rhythm and it was just double rhythm, that didn't happen in Great Bear. Like that sort of rhythm lock thing didn't happen in Great Bear. We would always like split things up and try to maximize things, but not like almost opposite of maximize and just like just do the rhythm. Oh, very, very satisfying. Very satisfying.
And then we could do unison melody. Like I love mm-hmm. unison melody for dances. It's one of my favorite things. And yep. So we could do both things. And then only two people makes the arranging a little bit easier if we get our mind meld where yeah, we can anticipate meld. What the other is going to do.
It's where it's at.
It's where it's at.
This is kind of the feat. Oh, the feet. It wouldn't. I'm glad there are feet too. That helped the sound.
Totally. Like, I don't think we could do all
like
these
two
things.
And a half people.
Yeah.
The feet definitely.
Right.
Well, it's more like, big part of that.
Right. We're cheating because you're two yeah. people because you're the fiddle and the feet, and yeah, I'm the right hand and the left hand, and they're not doing boom chuck all the time. Boom chuck is one musical concept, but I'm doing two musical concepts some of the time, and so we can get four people's worth out of two people. But only having two brains to have to coordinate with each other.
And only splitting the money up two ways.
Just... Those tens of dollars.
Live it up.
Can we talk about your foot percussion a little bit?
Yeah. It's similar to the fiddle thing. It's not, I didn't have a teacher. And it's pretty much self-taught. But I think it was from Ashokan. Mom actually learned it. Someone told mom what it was. And then she came back and showed Andrew and I, like, it's this, tap, you know, toe-toe heel, toe-toe heel, toe-toe heel, and showed us what it was. And then for whatever reason, Andrew wasn't interested in doing that. So I was like, okay, I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just have never stopped doing it.
Yeah. And you kind of developed your own style.
And then because of that, it's definitely turned into its own. It doesn't sound very French Canadian sometimes.
And why should it have to?
Yep.
That's not the kind of music you're playing.
Nope.
And so you've really like created this like contra dance style of foot percussion.
Yeah.
What are like, can you play for us since we have microphones and you have feet and we have a floor? Could you do like basic French Canadian feet and then show us some of your cool accents that you often do? No, I'll just lean over. Here, I'll lean my mic towards your feet. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so there's the normal foot percussion thing, and then at the end of phrases is where you mess with it. So one, two. Yeah, but you don't want to do too much because then it just sounds like noise.
And you're very careful with your phrasing. Like it's when you're playing for dancers.
Very matched to what I'm playing on fiddle.
Yeah.
Like the what I'm playing on fiddle informs what I do on feet very, very much.
Yeah.
Which is actually kind of funny sometimes when we record things. We did this with the Buddy System CDs. The when you need to record the feet first for like sonic reasons and you're not gonna do it at the same time, you want like just the feet. To have to do the feet without playing fiddle was a trip.
Yeah, you had to take your fiddle into the booth with you and mm-hmm. play air fiddle.
Yeah.
Like moving your fingers over the fingerboard. And yeah. Were you also air bowing?
No, I wasn't air bowing. No. I wasn't air
it was
bowing,
just the fingerboard but, yeah. end of things.
I was imagining the bowing part, but.
Yeah. So you're imagining the tune in your head. Okay, so could you play us a tune maybe from the Great Bear Years?
Yes.
And put some foot percussion with it?
Yeah, I can do that. I think I'm going to play. So this is to show how like the tune without the riff, the Great Bear riff thing that everyone remembers sounds very different. This is Cosmic Tim. This is the tune that had the
that. Da, da,
yeah, everyone.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah, that big, 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 big thing that everyone would like sing the last 3 years of Great Bear. Everyone would just like sing that every time we played it. It's very, very fun. Yeah, but I'll just play the tune without the riff. It's different.
I think stands on its own, but
it's different.
It's different. Yeah.
It changes.
Yeah. And then, well, what if you then contrast that with a different kind of tune, like something
from Buddy System.
Yeah, something from Buddy System.
I'll play a tune called Dragon Hatchery that we used to play.
With some nice variations in that.
Yeah, that was fun.
I mean, the way you play those two tunes is different. Like, your tone is different. I mean, when you totally. Played Dragon Hatchery there, you put a bunch of ornaments in it. Your facial expression suggested to me that it was kind of happening without your conscious knowledge and consent.
Which is very true for most of how I play music.
Things just happen.
Things just happen.
And I mean, I don't want to make this whole episode all about buddy system. It's just, I mean, that's the thing we have in common. So it's just the easiest thing to talk about.
Sure.
But that for me is a quote unquote accompanist, which I feel like doesn't really, like I come into buddy system with that philosophy, even though that's not what I'm doing anymore. But it is the philosophy of like listening to what you're doing and try to bring out different aspects of your playing and support them in different ways.
And it totally, totally worked.
Because there's sometimes when the way I play affects how many variations you do and affects whether you stay on the melody or go off the melody.
And that's actually a point that I've thought of this pandemic and quarantine and not playing with other people anymore, but still wanting to play music. So I still get my, so that's why I kind of started this write a tune a day thing I'm doing right now. So just an excuse to keep on playing music. But I'm realizing how I'm very impressionable. How I play fiddle really depends on who is playing backup. And I'm remembering that now, like from playing with Andrew. He would play one groove, one idea, and I would write a tune, and he would play the same chord progression with a completely different feel, and I would just write a completely different tune. Like my style is very impressionable by whatever the backup player is doing. I follow that a lot. So what you were saying makes sense. Like you can count, once you get to know me, you can kind of make me do what you want me to do.
I mean,
as a backup.
I wasn't going to say that out loud, but absolutely.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Because so, I don't really, not meaning to, it's not conscious, but it's like, okay, if you're going to do that, then I'm going to do that.
And you pull on this like different repertoire of things. Like you have a lot of contra dance tricks in your fiddling, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and that's not a bad
thing.
I do. Thing.
I got.
You know, like five chords and drones and like various things that
rhythm,
you do.
Rhythm, rhythm, rhythm,
rhythm. Rhythm, rhythm to build tension. Which you can, I mean, the best way to hear all those things is just to go on YouTube and look for videos of Great Bear. There are many videos.
Buddy System too, yeah.
And Buddy System.
We did it too, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's actually easier to hear in Buddy System. Right. There's just two of us. There's not a whole rhythm section building behind you or an electric guitar.
Yeah.
And you can hear what you're doing there. Do you worry stylistically about...
Nope. I don't even know the end of your question, but nope.
I knew that's how you were going to respond when I asked it. Thank
I'm
you.
Curious to see what the end of the question is, but no.
No, I mean that's the fun thing is that for conscious, you don't worry stylistically about what you're doing. Like in your head, are you considering is something traditional or not? Is that relevant?
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. The only thing I'm considering, and I'm only considering this when I'm actually being good and thinking about it, is it danceable? Like what does this do for a dancing experience? That is the only bit of thinking, quote unquote, thinking about what I'm playing.
I mean, you're very locked into the dancers when you play. And I mean, for me, that's one of my favorite things as a dance musician is that feeling when the whole dance floor is moving together and we are locked in as a band and we're locked in with them and the caller is grooving, and the choreography is just right. And I mean, that's a kind of traditional, like it wasn't always part of the contra dance experience. Like that wasn't the point of contra dancing, is to have this super tight subliminal mind meld between everyone. But that's a feature of modern contra dancing that is like a new kind of traditional that a lot of people really enjoy. It's what a lot of, especially dance weekend dancers, want to get. That kind of high from, it's exhilarating when it happens.
Yeah, I mean, it is. There's a magical thing that sometimes happens. And when you hit it, it's just perfect.
And so you do that without having to worry about like what styles you're drawing on. You know, like when I met you, I was trying to figure out where all the influences came from in your playing. I mean, because you're also a multi-instrumentalist. You also play guitar and tenor guitar and mandolin and didgeridoo, which I will not make you play on the podcast.
Oh, dear. I actually literally don't know where it is.
Is that your favorite thing?
I feel so good to, I don't know where it is. It's so, I mean, it's gone.
You're free. You're free. I mean, that was mostly pulled out in Great Bear, and it was always a crowd pleaser.
Yep.
But not those your were, main expressive instrument.
No, those were fun times that are now done, and that's fine.
Right. But like, so when I first started playing with you and really trying to figure out your fiddle style, because I like to think about tunes as different genres, like. I might accompany an Irish tune differently than like an old time tune or a French Canadian tune or whatever. And your playing has all these elements of all these things in it. It's got a little bit of Irish and it's got some like that Eileen Ivers kind of touch to it with the little fancy ornaments and the
Celtic-y things.
Yeah, the flourishes and things that she does. But then it's got this really drony, double stoppy. Oh, if you want to analyze your fiddle style for us, by the way, please feel free.
This is great.
I'm guessing you don't want to.
I mean, this is better than I could say. This is, yep.
And then you've got that like Appalachian old time influence with like all the drony double stops.
Mm-hmm.
And
I feel like, and I have actually thought about this a little bit recently, and I've been able to. The two main ones are like old time and Celtic, and I feel like I play old time tunes with triplets and ornaments and like with Celtic sensibilities and vice versa. Like I tend to play like Celtic-y tunes with much more drony Appalachian sort of rhythm, right hand, and that's what that equals is kind of contra dance music. Like it's that like fast and intricate,
mm-hmm.
But then all rhythm, like all about the rhythm.
Right, which is your bow hand.
Right.
Yeah, and that like old time music being so rhythmic, I don't know if you're specifically drawing on that or if it's just your own. I don't know a lot about bowing.
I zoned out in everything that Rodney Miller talked about bowing.
Do you think you picked it up subliminally?
Just glazed over for anything anyone talked about bowing. I have no idea what I picked up. I haven't ever given my bowing any thought other than wanting to make it sound danceable.
Yeah.
So if that means an up bow, cool.
Right.
Or a down bow or a slur. Like, yeah, it doesn't. I haven't ever... We played a little, Andrew got really into Swedish music for a while. And so, because I just copied what Andrew did, that we did with some Swedish music. And there was a little bit then there where I was trying to learn bowing and I hated every minute of it. So
mm-hmm. your brain, that's not how your brain works.
Yep.
You're a figure it out yourself kind of person.
Yeah.
But I think that's what, one of the things that makes your style like kind of a, you're like a contra fiddler, like through and through. I mean, you play many other kinds of music well, and your mandolin playing is really different from your fiddling.
Yes, it is.
Fascinating to me. It's like a whole other brain that you put on when you play the mandolin.
Yes, that's, yep.
It's like your mandolin playing is super clean and super neat and very crisp.
Right. Oh, yep. Not, I don't know how to make, you can't make noises on the mandolin in the same way.
Yeah. Whereas in the fiddle, you play a lot with dissonance and being like in between the notes and yeah. Dissonant double stops.
Some people would say it's out of tune, but actually, I'm just playing in between the notes on purpose.
Yeah, I'm not going to go there. You're in a band with a fixed pitch instrument, my friend. I always know when you're out of tune. But I think, like, when... I really understood your fiddle style the first year I went to a Shokin.
Hmm.
You know, you said that you had been going, this would have been your 20th of Shokin coming
this up. This year.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, because of the pandemic, it didn't happen. And that's when I realized there was this melting pot of like these Catskills fiddle style, because there is like a Catskills New York area fiddle style and Jay style, which is very swingy.
Yep.
And that was like the missing piece. But then also you've got like the New England playing of David Kaner. You've got the Celtic teachers who come through. You've got folks like Rodney Miller, who's from New England and rooted in that, but also with his own influences and his own style. And Swedish music, Scandinavian music
is
there.
Is always a big part of the week.
French-Canadian music there. Yep. Some of the lift in the bowing comes from that kind of music, like very syncopated kind of tunes.
Mm-hmm.
And the foot percussion, and it just all comes together in this melting pot.
Called contra dancing.
Yeah, I mean, modern contra dancing is many tunes from many styles all blended together. So in that sense, that's what you do. Except you write a lot of your own tunes.
Yeah, and that came about mostly from just laziness. Like, I don't, not wanting to, like, when we started a band, you had to teach me a lot of repertoire because I didn't really know a lot of tunes.
We literally spent a year.
Yeah.
Every time we rehearsed, I would just teach you tunes. I must have taught you 100 tunes.
Because whenever I was bored of the tunes that I already knew, like, you just write a tune. You wouldn't, having to, like, find a tune, learn it, make sure you learn it right. Oh, it was just from laziness. I didn't want to do any of that when, like, in high school. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, just became a habit, and I like writing tunes now quite a bit, but.
Yeah, and you've written many tunes now.
Yeah. Andrew and I probably should plug this, right?
Yeah,
Andrew and I have
great
a,
time.
Andrew put together a tune book last year. Well, he's been putting it together for many years, but he finally, like, actually got it done last year. Mm-hmm. It's 100 tunes of Andrew and I, and over the past 20 years, and all, like, the best ones. I think it's most of the tunes off of all of our CDs, and then more on top of that. But yeah, lots of tunes.
Do you think at all about adding tunes to the contra tradition versus, like, looking up old tunes, or, like, do you think about why you play tunes, or you just play what you like?
Yeah, probably just play what I like. It is, I will say that whenever something comes up where I hear that someone has played a tune of mine, like at a contra dance, or it has made its way into some local repertoire, it is a pretty good feeling.
Yeah.
That feels good.
Yeah.
So, if anyone wants to do more of that, you know, you're welcome to. It just feels pretty good. I think I have a tune called Windchill's Falls that has kind of gotten
that
out a little bit, and it's like,
and Gondolin
nice.
Had a good run,
right? Because Gondolin's in the Portland 2 collection, yeah. So that, yep.
But you write a lot of tunes, and when you're writing tunes, you don't worry about, like, is this traditional or not, or does the contra tradition need any more tunes? You just enjoy it, and you do it.
Yeah, yeah, and not thinking any of that. Nope.
Right. Well, I'm not saying you should have to.
Yep.
You know, but just because we often look at things through a certain lens, it's interesting to think about that. I mean, that is a living tradition. You know, you're just out there doing what you want to do, and the dancers, you know, usually love it. I'm not going to assume that everyone likes your tunes, but...
I do wonder.
But your tunes are usually great for contra dances because they're well-phrased for contra dances. They have a rhythmic energy to them. And unlike your 12-year-old self, I find your tunes now, usually they imply chords very strongly. Like, you somehow figured out chords in the last, like, 15 years or whatever.
Phew! It's just in time to not have anyone to play with. It's the pandemic.
Yeah, it won't last forever.
It is weird doing this tune a day. My tunes, it's much easier for my tunes all to just kind of sound alike because there isn't, I don't have any backup person, like, telling me how to play.
Yeah.
So it just kind of goes to a default thing, which is usually some sort of very rhythmic French Canadian sort of old timey Celtic driving thing. Mm-hmm. But it's always like the same, it always ends up being that same feel. It takes more work to write and play differently without having someone, some backup musician to inform that.
Yeah, to push yourself out of that. Or without having different kinds of input. Like, my tune writing is very influenced by whatever I'm listening to and playing. And
yeah, I'm sure that helps too.
Yeah. I mean, you have this really interesting ability to remember a tune and hold it in your head as you're writing it. And I can hear you as you're writing a tune, you're playing through it and you're revising it as you go, and you're conscious. It's like you can hold it like a three-dimensional projection and look at it from all angles and change it, which a lot of people can't do. You know, so there's trade-offs. Like, you also don't read sheet music.
Yes, very I can't read music at all.
Yeah, I said very well because I was trying to be generous, but we could say at all.
This is honest. Contrapulse is about getting to the honesty.
Take the real pulse.
Yeah, can't read music.
But you learn tunes incredibly fast, and you write tunes incredibly fast, and you hold them in your head. So it's really like, you know, your brain is set up for these other things.
That is the norm, that like writing a tune and revising it as you go. That's like the usual thing that I do while writing a tune. And then you do get like lucky, and sometimes the tune just happens the first time you play it, and it's just the way it is from the very first time you play it. And those are like very, very rare, and they always make you feel real special.
Yeah.
Like, they always feel real good to like just play something, and then it just is, that's just the way it is. That happened recently, and it's only happened like probably like under 10 times of writing tunes, but it's like, ooh, I like that.
Yeah, it just comes out fully formed, and you're kind of like, where did that come from?
I don't know, but I like it.
Or more often I'll get like, or you'll get like an A part that'll just come to you, and then write a B part to go with it sometimes too.
That's more common, yeah.
But you'll get like half a tune come fully formed with a good hook in it, and then you just finish it later.
Yeah, I guess that kind of happened yesterday.
Yeah.
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 Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I promised, well, we were talking about inspiration a couple episodes back in the episode with Kate Barnes. And I usually ask people, so what inspires you? But then talking, like when we were getting to know each other as bandmates, I asked you that question and you're like, I don't.
Blank stare. Blank stare.
So I told everybody that I would make sure we came back to it today so that you could talk about your own inspiration in your own words.
Nice. So there are very, very, very rare times when inspiration does happen. It's usually a person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's super, super rare. So it's not that it never happens. And when it does happen, it is like, oh, this is what inspiration feels like. This is what everyone's talking about. Because other than those very rare times, I don't understand the concept. Like, what do you mean inspiration? They're notes in an order. The end.
So where do they come from if they don't come from inspiration?
Where do they come from?
Are they motor patterns in your fingers?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, and you just get lucky by coming up with a new pattern.
Yeah.
And sometimes the pattern ends up being something that's catchy and good, and that's cool. But that inspiration is so such a elusive thing for me to actually feel.
Do you ever sing? Do you ever write tunes by singing them, or do they always come out of instruments in your hands?
I would say like 90% is always instruments, but yeah, some once or twice.
Yeah.
Like yesterday was the tune a day thing was.
Your tune Wantastiquit.
That was, we were walking somewhere and I was singing. It's like, oh, I should remember that.
Right. I think it's partly learning it's like a little bit of discipline, or like the process, learning the process of making a note of your ideas as they go by. And just remembering to grab them before they go off into the atmosphere and sing them into your phone or get back to your fiddle and record it or something. And you write a lot of tunes during sound checks.
Sound check tunes are the best.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if they're the best, but they're fun.
And I just got in the habit of like, oh, Noah's writing a soundtrack today. I'm just going to get my phone out for him and start recording, save you the trouble. And then often, like, we'll finish soundchecking, but you want to keep playing a tune to keep finishing it. And then the caller's got everyone lined up. And you're like, while they're doing the walkthrough, you'll turn around really quickly and play the tune into your phone right before the four potatoes.
I think there's something about, because the soundtrack tune, you have your amplified. And that's a, you don't ever usually write music when you're amplified. So your brain thinks of different notes to play.
Yeah, you sound different.
You sound different.
More resonant or something.
Something like you hear yourself, reverb maybe. I don't know. Like it's different when you're amplified. So soundtrack tunes is like the only time you get to like write while you're being loud, being made louder.
Well, you know, this isn't a Tunecraft podcast, although that would
be
really
fun. It is now.
I know. We can talk about whatever we want to. It's all Contra related. But one fun story is the way you wrote that tune, Dragon Hatchery. Mm-hmm. We were actually together at a rehearsal in Tennessee.
Yeah, Jonesboro, Tennessee.
Yeah, Jonesboro, at the house called the Dragon Hatchery. And I was testing out a new reverb pedal for the techno setup. And we had like a D drone going on that I was playing with reverb. And you just were holding your fiddle and you started noodling over it with your reverb effects. You fell asleep while noodling.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that you were playing the same ideas over and over again. And I actually realized that you wrote a tune. So I got out my phone and recorded what you were playing with your eyes closed. And you seem to have no awareness of me at all.
No, that's never happened before. That was a one-time thing so far. Like because I do vividly remember waking up. I was like, I woke up playing a tune that I did not go to sleep playing. And I don't think I ever have like actually played fiddle in my sleep. That's also something. But yeah, I remember waking up playing the tune. Like, what? What's this? What am I playing? And then I woke up and saw that Julie was recording it. It's like, okay, good. What else did I say anything?
Oh, too bad you're not a sleep talker.
Yeah, that was interesting. It wasn't like deep sleep, obviously, but it was definitely dozed, so it's not conscious.
Yeah. I mean, I find that I learn tunes the fastest at 3 a.m. Like, those late night jams at camps, I learn the most tunes in the summer. I mean, I could learn a tune from a recording, which is my other favorite way to learn, and I just play the recording over and over again until my brain picks up all the, like 20 times or so through mm-hmm. the tune. My brain has memorized all the ornaments and all the chord subs and everything. But my favorite way is like main fiddle camp 3 a.m. out under the trees by the water or inside a building because we're supposed to be indoors. They go into my brain faster. It's like my conscious brain isn't thinking and getting in the way. It's like they bypass the whole front of my brain and go directly into the tune storage center. And so most people don't try that as a creative outlet. Although I have written some piano things when I'm sleepy. You know, I'm most creative at night because I can stop worrying about the day and just let my brain turn off. So, you know, if anyone's out there thinking about writing tunes, here's some very impractical tips from Noah and Julie. We recommend sleeping, drones, 3 a.m. sessions outdoors in the summer.
Good luck.
Thanks for listening to ContraPulse. This project is supported by CDSS, the Country Dance and Song Society, and is produced by Ben Williams. Thanks to Great Meadow Music for the use of tunes from the album Old New England by Bob McQuillan, Jane Orzechowski, and Deanna Stiles. Visit contrapulse.cdss.org for more info. Happy dancing!